We're going to press on with the book of Jeremiah, chapter 39 and 40. I'd like to turn over there. I've enjoyed this a lot, so maybe that's why he thought I should be leading the discussion on this tonight. I've enjoyed Jeremiah immensely, as I know most of you have. And, let's pray together before we start our class. Father in heaven, thank you so much for all you do for us, and especially, Father, you give us knowledge and understanding and through the revelation brought to us through your word in many, many ways. And now tonight we're studying Jeremiah the prophet, and your servant, your faithful servant, as he was, as difficult as his task was, to preach at a time when the country, the nation was about to be destroyed. And we know, Father, he spoke for you, and he mourned over this loss, just like you did. And help us learn from this lesson tonight and these chapters, and help us all, Father, to serve you more as a result of any time we spend in your word. And bless Philip and Lori, as they have a lot on their hands with Lori's dad. Help everything to go as well as possible. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So we're going to read the text a little bit at a time. This is an unusual two chapters. It's very narrative, very different than some of the other chapters that we've been studying. And so it's pretty straightforward, the things that are in here. Some of them are some of the toughest. I think this is included to show that Jeremiah was indeed a prophet sent from God, because this chapter, 39, is really a very succinct little look at the ultimate demise and fall of Judah. And it's, you know, some of these chapters, you know, we're reading them at home, and, you know, you're reading and it's so long, and it's verse 29 and it's like 38 verses. Not these two chapters. This one is 18 verses, so pretty short. And 40 is also a fairly short chapter. But they're very brief in what they're saying, and it's not good. It's not good in many ways, but we still learn from it. This concise account of the capture of Jerusalem and the king and the people. And then there's also a little bit in this chapter about Jeremiah's release from the Babylonians, and also a little bit on Ebed-Melech, and a blessing that Jeremiah, that God places on him for his faithfulness. But I'll ask you guys to help me with reading this tonight. Let's just read the first three verses. Daryl, I'll start with you. Could you read the first three verses of chapter 39 of Jeremiah?
Now it came about when Jerusalem was captured in the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army came to Jerusalem and laid siege to it. In the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the 4th month, in the 9th day of the month, the city wall was breached. Then all the officials of the king of Babylon came in and sat down at the middle gate, Nergal, Sarezer, Samgar, Nebu, Sar, Sekem, and Rabsaris, Nergal, Sarezer, the Rabnag, and all the rest of the officials of the king of Babylon.
So this is the fall. This is the fall of Jerusalem, and really the demise of Judah. And what does this tell us? What information do we get from this? The dates give you a little bit of a clue as to how long the siege lasts. Hebrew months were 12 months, so about how long did this siege last? I thought 16, but that's close, yes. By the way, there's other records of this event in Kings, and a very similar, this closing chapter of Jeremiah 52 hits on these same things again, almost like Chronicles does or something. It's a chronicle of the account. But it's very similar. It doesn't name these same names of all these individuals. Well, Kings does, but the latter, the one in Jeremiah does not. But we've learned about the siege, some of the things that were going on during it, and we can get a, even though this is a short little, you know, summation of what happened, we know that this was the most difficult time that Jeremiah laments. And I didn't get the exact places, but what are some of the things that were happening during the siege, the, some of the horrible things that they talked about?
They resorted to cannibalism.
Yeah. They just, I mean, it takes us a long time to run out of food and water, but you can imagine a society like that. And a year and a half or a year and 4 months, whatever it was, it probably only took a few months. And then the most horrendous things, because they were, they couldn't go in or out. So, and that was when they were basically, you know, brought to their knees and probably couldn't defend themselves anymore. And the breach was, the breach happened. And evidently the sitting down in the gate were all the generals or whatever, and one of the gates, and deciding how they were going to proceed potentially. We don't really know. And it evidently, Nebuchadnezzar is talked about coming up with them, but probably didn't stay the entire time. It looks like he was staged in another city not far away. Actually, it was probably in the very northern part of Canaan, that where Nebuchadnezzar was. And there's references to that a little bit later on. But there's another guy that's kind of leads things, the captain of the bodyguard, someone named Nebuzaradan. We'll read about him. But any questions about that so far? It's basically just the city wall was breached, and what happens right after that. 4 through 8, and Jesse, I know you'd like to read that. Please, thank you.
So it was, when Zedekiah the king of Judah and all the men of war saw them, that they fled and went out of the city by night, by way of the king's garden, by the gate between the two walls. And he went out by the way of the plain, but the Chaldean army pursued them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had captured him, they brought him up to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he pronounced judgment on him. Then the king of Babylon killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes in Riblah. The king of Babylon also killed all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with bronze fetters to carry him off to Babylon. And the Chaldeans burned the king's house and the houses of the people with fire and broke down the walls of Jerusalem.
So, Zedekiah, of course, didn't take Jeremiah's counsel. And what did he do that brought this?
He resisted
he chose to resist. One of the problems that the consistently disobeying God's counsel through Jeremiah, rather than submit, he looked at Egypt potentially, coming in and helping. And of course, God had other thoughts on this. And so it's a horrendous story, really. As soon as he saw that the city had fallen, what did he do? And snuck away by night through, it's the Pool of Siloam. It's that same area that evidently, that where the king's garden is. And then through two walls, went out toward the Arabah. Now, we've all done our little maps. Does anybody remember where the Arabah was? That's evidently the Jordan Valley, yes. Did you do good on your little? You did good on your map, evidently. You did. The Arabah. That was so helpful. I missed that. That was fun to do. But the Arabah is the Jordan Valley, where evidently he thought he could sneak down that way. And where does it say he was ultimately captured? Does this one say that? Verse 5, the middle part of verse 5. The plains of Jericho. So, by the way, all of this is, you were saying?
Oh, I'm sorry.
were taken to another nearby city where, this city's like, picture Israel and, the very northern tribes are. Just outside of that is where this place was, where Riblah is what I've read different places, the little Bible maps. And that's where Nebuchadnezzar was. In the land of Hamath, wherever that is. And they passed sentence.
I was just looking that up, actually, just trying to figure out. Here's a little bit of Damascus.
Yes. Yeah, up in that area. I mean, you got desert to one side, so that's crescent. You go up that way. So he wasn't all the way back in Babylon, so he's probably got plenty of protection there, and he's reigning from right there. And one of the other accounts, I think, in Kings talks about his sons being slain before his eyes. We know this horrendous story, but this also mentions who else?
The nobles
of Judah. I think the EVS, because it uses the word slaughter. They were slaughtered before his eyes. And my version says slew all the nobles of Judah. So it's a horrendous event. Typically, I think he would have been just slain for what he had done. I mean, that's what most of the punishments would have been, that he was just killed. But evidently, Nebuchadnezzar had other things in mind for him. And so he's bound in these fetters of bronze and then brought to Babylon to be imprisoned there. And I don't know this one, this account says it, but one of the other accounts says that that's where he stayed till his death, was in a dungeon somewhere. So all part of God's, the consequence of their sins, really. Now, I don't know if that specifically you can say that, but this is just, these are just unusual chapters, We read, David and Solomon and the greatness of this kingdom. And now we see it, some rough times. And so really, let's look at the people are taken captive. Read 9 and 10. And Les, you want to do 9 and 10?
Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive to Babylon the remnant of the people who remained in the city and those who defected to him with the rest of the people who remained. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left in the land of Judah the poor people who had nothing and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time.
Yeah. So the city falls. The rest of the people who were left in the city, by the way, the last chapter in Jeremiah 52 numbers these people. That's what reminded me of Chronicles. During the deportation, 3,000 was taken this time and 800 this time. But this is a description of the exact same thing. The deserters who had gone over to him and the rest of the people who remained were carried into exile into Babylon. And we're going to learn that there's one person that probably wasn't supposed to be in that group who was shackled and was taken. And who was that, basically?
Jeremiah.
Yeah. It evidently sounds like that was a mistake, most likely. He was evidently looked upon in the same level by the Babylonians as, like, they're seers, which would have been someone of standing in their society. You don't know what else to make of that. This is a very unusual account of what's about to happen here in regards to how the Babylonians are treating Jeremiah in the next verses here. And just stop with any questions anybody has, comments. So let's read on a little more. 11 through 14. Earl, you want that?
Now, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave orders about Jeremiah through Nebuzaradan, the captain of the bodyguard, saying, "Take him and look after him and do nothing harmful to him, but rather deal with him just as he tells you." So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the bodyguard, sent word along with Nebuzaradan, the Rabsaris, and Nergal, Sir Ezer, and Rabmag, and all the leading officers of the king of Babylon. They even sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the guardhouse and entrusted him to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, to take him home. So he stayed among the people. Now the word of the Lord had come to Jeremiah.
That's good.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So what do you make of this right here? Isn't it kind of unusual? Why don't they just kill everybody, you know, and take everybody off?
Heard that he was a prophet that prophesied that Jerusalem would fall. And now I'm just guessing it. And so word got back that, you know, this is the one that said, you know, that tried to advise Zedekiah to surrender and didn't. And that's why I guess he was treated with favor.
Yeah. His reputation preceded him.
I don't know exactly what the timeline is, but I also wonder if there's any influence from, or, you know, have respect for Daniel, because Nebuchadnezzar was acquainted with Daniel. He knew he was from Judah, and I don't know if that gave him any additional thought to do something different with Jeremiah because of his standing as well.
I can phone a friend. Philip?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. No, I don't know the timeline on that.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just something that I've wondered about when you're
talking. Does anybody else want to venture on that one? The timeline? I know this was... Yes, go ahead.
Zedekiah been king, it said 11 years, right?
Yeah.
The city's taken in the 11th year of Zedekiah's reign, right? So Daniel and his friends have been in Babylon at least a decade by this point in time.
Yeah. So it could have been, yes. I mean, he's certainly not a nice guy or anything yet. He's not, you know, he's still a very ruthless, fierce leader. So,
I'm just saying he may have a different regard for prophets of the Lord based on what he's some events.
Yeah. Well, you get if the knowledge of what he was preaching was known, then he's been fully exonerated, really, because of the events that have just happened. He's, it's obvious that he was a prophet speaking for God, because he was so clear about this. So potentially, that might given him credibility in their eyes. Yes.
Ezekiel is kind of the third contemporary that we tend to forget is living right now. Ezekiel is also prophesying the destruction of Jerusalem, and Zedekiah is going to get dragged to Babylon. But Daniel's mentioned by name, according to my quick look at my dictionary here. Daniel's mentioned my name 3 times in the book of Ezekiel. So his reputation is already somewhat widely known.
Well, in the nation, you know, as a people, they were always a thorn in the side of these kingdoms, and their faithfulness and their, you know, not faithfulness that caused this consequence. But yes,
I was just going to say that, and you know, at this point, Jeremiah has been preaching his message for a very long time, and you know Nebuchadnezzar was sending spies in.
Yeah.
And they were hearing that from a Babylonian perspective. You're going to be like, man, this guy's on our side.
Yeah. You know what's amazing? How about the difference in the treatment he got from his enemies compared to the treatment he got from his own? You know, where is that found in the New Testament? What did Jesus say?
He came to his own, and his own.
Yeah, or.
He not rejected
it? Yes, I was thinking of the prophets.
Yeah, in his own town.
How many times even in the Old Testament do we see that? I mean, we have the kings of Israel going and inquiring of the gods of Ashdod. And yet when Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, is on his deathbed, he's told, hey, why is your town? He's like, go see him.
Yeah.
And he sends a huge present to him.
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot more respect by the king of Syria for the prophets of Israel than even the kings of Israel.
Yeah. Very true. So any other comments about this? God, in the very beginning of this book, what did God say to Jeremiah in chapter 1 and verse 8?
Him?
Pardon?
Not to fear those?
Because I'll deliver you.
Yeah.
Here's his deliverance. He's pulled out of this crowd, singled out, and there's a little more about this, about how in the next chapter, about how he's going to be treated more specifically. We'll get back into that. But really, his faithfulness is just like ours. Our faithfulness will be is the constant lesson through this. Peter says, cast your anxieties on God, which is what Jeremiah did through some incredibly anxious 40 years of preaching. So this is, some scholars say these last few verses in here of this particular book were probably, you know, added in or what have you. I don't know. Because it's a, or they could have been dated and put somewhere else besides in here. Who is this guy? Let's see, 15 through 18. Somebody hadn't read yet. Frank, you want to read? Vince, go for it. 15 through 18.
Now the word of the Lord had come to Jeremiah while he was confined in the court of the guardhouse, saying, go speak to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I am about to bring my words on this city for disaster and not for prosperity, and they will take place before you on that day. But I will deliver you on that day, declares the Lord, and you shall not be given into the hand of the men whom you dread. For I will certainly rescue you, and you will not fall by the sword, but you will have your own life as booty, because you have trusted in me, declares the Lord.
Yeah. So, y'all remember his name. What did he do? Do you remember? I had to look it up myself. Pardon? It wasn't long ago, just a chapter or two ago, the account. Yeah. He had the bravery to approach the king and say, this isn't right. He's going to die in that cistern. Because there wasn't a lot of food go around anyway. So nobody's going to throw any bread down to Jeremiah. So he would basically starve to death. And he's the one that helped free him. Remember, he got all the old cloths, put it under the arms, pulled him out of the cistern. And another example of faithfulness rewarded, really, because he singled out, and evidently Jeremiah was confined in the courthouse, so this was a message he may have sent to him, go and speak to Ebed-Melech. You know, this city's going to be destroyed, but you will be. And I'll deliver you on that day. It also is just a, you know, people question the Bible. If they read it, they'll see so many truths, historical truths. There's places where those guys' names in verse 3 have been found in some, you know, archaeological digs and all. But the Bible also, the themes of reward or consequences for faithfulness are all throughout the Bible. This is just another example of it here. You'll not fall by the sword. You'll have your own life as booty. Because you've trusted in me, declares the Lord. So maybe that's why the Lord puts little things like that into his into these narratives.
But that, it reminds us a little bit of the Rechabites.
Yeah.
You know, they were faithful, and God recognized and remembered and blessed them because of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is the sermon.
Well, God is God's sermon, right? But yes, you're right. Great examples of that. And then there's a contrast. Who was it just last week, Philip's lesson, that your line's going to get stamped out? It was one of the kings, I think, for his lack of faithfulness. Jehoiachin, maybe, I think it was. The consequence for that, it's contrast of consequences versus blessings. But I appreciate you bringing that up. So next chapter, 40, another unusual chapter in terms of the things we read, these events that take place. And the setting is just this bleak place where that was well run and well, you know, from a political and well run nation. But it's not that now. Verses 1 through 6, Andrew, do you want to, of chapter 40? This is a short, if we have time, we'll go a little bit to 41.
1 through 16.
The way this ends, tame, it ends chapter 40. This is
the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord after Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had let him go from Ramah. When he had taken him bound in chains among all who were carried away captive from Jerusalem and Judah who were carried away captive to Babylon. And the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said to him, "The Lord your God has pronounced this doom on this place. Now the Lord has brought it and has done just as he said, because you people have sinned against the Lord and not obeyed his voice. Therefore this thing has come upon you. And now look, I free you this day from the chains that were on your hand. If it seems good to you to come with me to Babylon, come, and I will look after you. But if it seems wrong for you to come with me to Babylon, remain here. See, all the land is before you. Wherever it seems good and convenient for you to go, go there." Now while Jeremiah had not gone back, Nebuzaradan said, "Go back to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon has made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people. Or go wherever it seems convenient for you to go." So the captain of the guard gave him rations and a gift and let him go. And Jeremiah went to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people who were left in the land.
So we could call this Jeremiah's decision, because the ball was put in his court here, which is amazing in and of itself. These other people had no liberty, were shackled, and their destiny was clear. And he has total freedom, not just to be free to stay there, but if he wants, he can do what?
Oh, I was just going to say, pretty much the whole country is now shackled and Jeremiah is free, which is the polar opposite that the rest of the book has been, which the entire country's been free and he's been shackled. Because remember, a few chapters ago, he couldn't even go into the city, the other city.
Yeah, that, you're right. That's a fascinating point about this. Yes.
Another interesting thing about this section of text right here is the captain of the bodyguard is saying, because you people sinned against the Lord and did not listen to his voice, therefore this thing has happened to you. Here we have a heathen telling Jeremiah. Of course, Jeremiah already knows it, but you people have sinned. This is coming from somebody who's not an Israelite, but he knows what the deal is.
I noticed that too. He uses the pronoun you for Jeremiah representing the people also. Yeah. And then in this, almost in the next sentence, he's saying you, meaning him individually. And now you can be free or something like that. But is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm just saying that. The point I'm making is, here's a man who's not an Israelite, and yet he's able to see and understand that this happened to the Israelites because they sinned against God, when the Israelites themselves couldn't even see it.
Yeah. Jeremiah probably shook his head and said, well, at least you got the message. You know, and there's craziness even coming in the next little bit about people not getting the messages of God. But yeah, that's a good point. It is a fascinating conversation, you know. Do you think his mind was totally made up as to what he was going to do? Did he even have a choice in that, do you think? Why he chose to do what he did?
Does he choose?
Pardon?
Does he choose? Because it looks like the captain of the guard makes the choice for him. It looks like he's hesitating a minute before making the decision, and then the captain's like, go home.
Well, he said, if you would prefer verse 4 to come with me, come along, which is fascinating, too. I'm going to personally look after you, the captain of the guard. It probably would give that guy a little esteem to have this well-known prophet be in his charge, but who knows. But if you prefer not to come with me, so where do you get from that he's...
First five. How that's written.
Oh, yeah, it's Jeremiah. Well, Jeremiah says... NAS says, was still not going back. Go on back then to get Eliah the son of Ak. Okay, so he hesitated maybe. That's what you're thinking.
I think he's hesitating, maybe waiting for instruction or something, and
decisions
made for him to go.
And for our sake,
as we find out here in the next couple of chapters, the job ain't quite done yet.
Yeah. Nope, it's not done. Yes.
I was just looking it up, this guy, the guy who let him out, according to some historical texts, they say that he had a dream from God that said to continue on in this assault of Jerusalem. He had been thinking about turning back. So, I don't know. Maybe he had some reason to be leading him out of there. Maybe God had spoken to him. He knew that this was what needed to be done.
There's times that he's such a spiritually minded man. There's other times he's just one of us, you know, some of the things that happened to him. And but it's hard to know.
I'm talking about
we have what we have.
Nebuzaradan.
Oh, really? Talk about him. Yeah. Oh, I got you. So he chooses to stay. And what does the captain give him? It's really amazing.
He gives him some
food and a what? A gift. Some little... like from him personally. And he chooses to stay, ration and a gift. And then he went to Mizpah, which is where Gedaliah, the son of Achim, and stayed with him among the people who were left in the land. And so it's just this, you know, these folks left behind. A little bit about Gedaliah as governor versus 7 to 12. Anybody else want to read here? Start over here. Okay, go for it.
But Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, a eunuch, while he was in the king...
You said
7?
7.
Verse 40. Chapter 40. So.
Oh, gosh. You told me the right thing. I was looking back. Now all the commanders of the forces that were in the field, they and their men heard that the king of Babylon had appointed Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, over the land, and that he had put him in charge of the men, women, and children, those of the poorest of the land who had not been exiled to Babylon. So they came to Gedaliah at Mizpah, and along with Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, and Johanna, and Jonathan, the sons of Keretha, and Seraiah, the son of Tanhumath, and the sons of Ephah, the Nephamite, I'm butchering these names anyway, along with another one, both they and their men. Then Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, swore to them and to their men, saying, "Do not be afraid of serving the Chaldeans. Stay in the land and serve the king of Babylon, that it may go well with you. Now, as for me, behold, I am going to stay at Mizpeh to stand for you before the Chaldeans who come to us. But as for you, gather in the wine and the summer fruit and oil and put them in your storage vessels, and live in your cities that you have taken over. Likewise, also all the Jews who were in Moab and among the sons of Ammon and in Edom, and who were in all the other countries, heard that the king of Babylon had left a remnant for Judah, that they had appointed over them Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan. Then all the Jews returned from all the places to which they had been driven away and came to the land of Judah and Gedaliah at Mizpeh, and gathered the wine and summer fruit in great abundance."
It's good our names aren't like that, isn't it? This is Vince, the son of your dad's name, and the son of, because a lot of those extra words were all those sons of. But so what's happening here, do you think? This is not any big prosperous nation by any means. It's just these leftover folks. And so different things are going to be recorded here that are going on. It says the commanders of the forces that were in the field. Are there any forces there? There's potentially, I read a thing said there were potentially guerrilla type groups out in the countryside, maybe still doing a little guerrilla raids on the Chaldeans. And so when they heard that the king had appointed Gedaliah, the son of, no, I'm just kidding, they get involved here, basically. And also what's happening in regards to, if you're Nebuchadnezzar and you're putting this guy in this role, what are these vassal nations supposed to do, basically, over time? He put some people in charge to try to get some crops, you know, growing and some vineyards.
To pay tribute.
So one of the things this Zedekiah's got to do, Gedaliah has to do, is potentially, the poor people aren't any threat to the Babylonians, but he's got to help, calm down these guys who are probably still wanting to, they're still hurting from what had just happened, basically. So he's got to try to halt some of this guerrilla action. And he tells them not to fear who? Chaldeans, right? Not to fear the Babylonians. You know, submit like I'm doing. That's what's going to be best for you. That's really just what's happening here, I believe. And also, it's also mentioned about these Jews in Moab and other places. Possibly they had, like refugees had gone to those other countries, and now they're slowly coming back once they hear that there's a ruler in place and there's an effort to try to, continue on. But what else here? There's a plot that's going to be hatched here as we go towards the latter part of this book, 13 through 16. And, Frank, do you want to give that a try? 13 through 16?
What number?
13 to 16.
Okay.
All right.
Moab, Joanna, the son of Kabish, and all of the captains of the forces that were in the fields came to Gedaliah at Mizpeh. And said to him, "Do you certainly know that Balas, the king of the Amorites, has sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to murder you? But Gedaliah, the son of Achim, and did not believe them. Then Joanna, the son of Kabish, spoke secretly to Gedaliah in Mizpah, saying, "Let me go, please, and I will kill Ishmael, the son of Nethaneel, and no one will know it. Why should he murder you so that all the Jews who are gathered to you would be scattered and the remnant in Judah perish?" But Gedaliah, the son of Kim, said to Joanna, the son of Koresh, "You shall not do this thing, for you speak falsely concerning Ishmael."
Yeah. So, how do you think about Gedaliah's wisdom here? Without even reading even into chapter 41, do you have a sneaking idea of what's about to happen to Gedaliah? Yes. And you get this picture of this sincere guy. Yeah, the Babylonians asked me to, you know, watch over things here, and I'm going to do that. That's the picture I get anyway. And here he's got somebody that's saying, "Hey, I'll take care of this for you because I've got good information that you're going down." And he doesn't even bother heeding that. I meant to look it up, the reference of what did Jesus say when he was going to do such and such, but he knew the heart of men. You know, he knew what was in the minds of men and the hearts of men. That's an example of, you know, the wisdom we've got to have in this world. But he didn't have that wisdom.
A little naive.
Yes. And
but he's definitely not that type of person. No. And his father, from what little we read about him, was a decent person himself. Because yeah. We've actually came across him a time or two.
Yeah. You know, moving forward, we know Ishmael is not a good guy in the next chapter. And we don't really have a record of why he's doing what he's doing. I think we know that he was of a noble birth or whatever, or in the royal. So he potentially didn't like the fact that he was passed over, but he has got some rage and jealousy that causes him to do what he does, not just to Gedaliah, but to many others.
I think it's rage, jealousy, or maybe just national fervor.
Could have been that too. Could have been that. Didn't like that Gedaliah was submitting to the Chaldeans. Hard to know, but But he goes on to slaughter a lot of other people too in this next chapter, not just Gedaliah. So he had some problems, no doubt about it. So. The plan is 41, 42, and 43. And it's more this narratives. So we'll do that on Sunday according to the plan, what Philip asked me to do. Thanks, y'all.